Welcome to episode 386 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm your very, very, very special guest, James Montemagno. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
So how special are you?
Well, pretty special, like times
very,
three.
Very, very special. How many very, varies very was that?
A lot of special.
Four varies? You're pretty special.
Pretty special. I like to think that, at least. That's what my mom tells me.
I agree. You are very special. You're special to me, and I think you're special to all of the Entertainment 2.0 audience. They'll be happy to hear that the happy hipster is back on the show.
I am, but I do also, because we're talking about Microsoft entertainment technology on this podcast, we should probably get some disclaimers out of the way, Josh.
We probably should.
I do happen to work for Microsoft.
Yeah, so that's true. But
all of my opinions and statements on this podcast are of classic James Montemagno form factor. So rest assured, everything spouting from my mouth is classic James.
Yeah, I just don't see Microsoft wanting to claim many of the words that come out of your mouth. So no. I think we're covered.
Yeah, we're good.
All right. So we like to start the show off with some listener feedback. And unlike the last couple of episodes, we do have some feedback this time. So thank you to Kevin. What he did is he sent us an email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Kevin sent a big one with lots of questions.
Sent you
don't
you
have
book?
To send lots of questions, but these are lots of good questions and I think good to share with you guys. So as has been pretty common lately, we're going to start the show off with a bunch of Plex stuff because that's what Kevin's questions were about. Then we'll get into all of the rest of the other Microsoft stuff that happened, like that little 2 hour long event that they had earlier today. So first off.
Yeah. When are you going to change it? So this is the show where we talk about entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming across all platforms, you know, I think that's what this should be, right? That'd be great. Cause to me, this is super interesting too, because listener to the show, been on the show a few times, love our holiday special from many years ago. I'm a huge fan of Plex. I'm all about it. I loved when you guys had the guy from Plex on. I love the things that they're doing on Android as a platform, but also as the PC server. So I don't want to ruin this statement, but I feel like we can just really take this podcast in a new direction. Me and you, Josh, let's leave it. You know, I'm just kidding. But, I'm super excited. This is a great short essay that Kevin wrote. So I'll let you listen to it.
It's not really so much of an essay. It's mostly a bunch of questions. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a question and then I'm just going to answer it. I'm not going to come back to all of them after all the questions. And James, if you have stuff to add to my answers, feel free. If not, no big deal. We'll just jump on to the next question.
I'll probably have things to chime in with. Probably won't add any value, but they'll be there.
Well, that's why you're here, to not add value to the show.
Exactly.
Okay. So Kevin says, I use Windows Media Center and have no plans to change and abandon it, unlike Windows or Microsoft. That said, I'm curious about Plex. I listen to your podcast and have researched a small bit, but can't seem to find easy answers to a few simple, maybe obvious questions. Maybe you could answer them. Question number one, can you run Windows Media Center and Plex on the same home theater PC? And if you do, can you do it at the same time? Are there any conflicts with tuners, for instance? So me personally, I don't. I run Plex, the server part of Plex, on my main development computer, because that's the most powerful one, and an NVIDIA Shield TV, which is what I'm switching to be my primary Plex server.
You're welcome.
But yes, thank you. But there's no reason why you couldn't run Media Center and Plex on the same machine. Now, if it's not a very powerful machine, you could run into issues because Plex, if you're watching from clients that need to have all of their video transcoded, then all of that processing needs to happen on the Plex server. So it does need to be somewhat beefy. It doesn't need to be a supercomputer by any stretch of the imagination. But if you're doing a bunch of transcoding for Plex, plus you've got file conversions running on your Windows Media Center to, cut out commercials and change formats on them and stuff like that. All of that could chew up resources on your PC and that could run into problems. But if you're not doing a lot of that sort of stuff, I doubt you're going to have any issues running both of them on the same machine. I'm sure tons of people run Media Center and Plex on the same machine.
Yeah, the only thing that I would add there is it depends what kind of household you're in too. And I used to run Windows Media Center. I don't anymore. I always do OTA. But you know, the thing to be concerned with there is who else is using that Windows Media Center machine. When you have a Plex server, you're going to want to install updates. You're going to drag and configure stuff around. How I used Windows Media Center, it was a machine that it was always on. I never updated. I never touched it. It was the perfect family approved. It's kind of crazy that Windows Media Center is still like the best DVR that was like ever developed and still is, right? It's just it's still the best. It's crazy. So that would be my concern, Josh, is like, hey, you know, if it's a family Windows Media Center machine, you don't want to have to go in and like, oh, I got to go wait until 2 o'clock when everyone's done with Minecraft. And then, you know, I can toggle with the Media Center, right? Because Plex is installed. Like, that's why I think the advantage of installing it on separate machines. And then if your tuners are just on the network, then it probably shouldn't matter. Would you assign tuners to each of them? Is that how you would do it? Like Media Center, two goes to Plex?
The tuner situation is where things get a little tricky. And I don't have a great answer for this yet, because in terms of using Plex as a DVR, I've still only kind of played with it. I haven't like totally switched over or anything like that yet. I think the problem that you're going to have is that Plex doesn't know anything about Windows Media Center, and Windows Media Center doesn't know anything about Plex. So if you set up, 5 recordings for 9 p.m. on Friday, and, you know, 4 of them are on Media Center, let's say you do 4 of them on Media Center, and then you don't really think about it, and you schedule 3 more on Plex, well, you're going to run out of tuners, and something's going to fail. And it may not fail all that gracefully. I haven't really experienced that yet, but you're going to have some issues there. I think that in terms of setting up something for a DVR, pick one.
Yeah, that's what I say. I agree with that. Yeah, pick one.
I don't think you're going to have a great experience trying to use both of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm. All right. I would then use Plex on like an Android TV or a Shield or something like that. Then you're like, hey, this is my streaming device, right? Where I have all my content that's like streaming as a client, right? Because you can use the server and the client together. But ideally, like, you maybe just have another client on your network. So you're like, hey, dedicated Windows Media Center, Plex client somewhere else or on the same machine, sharing libraries, and then different client, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to run the Plex client on the same machine as Windows Media Center, that's totally fine. I don't think you're going to have any issues there. The Plex client doesn't really use much in terms of resources. All of the heavy work happens at servers. So I think that would be fine also.
Yeah.
And there is a Plex home theater app that's designed to be run on a home theater PC full screen like Windows Media Center. All right, next question. Mm-hmm. Can Windows Media Center and Plex share libraries? What I assume he means is, can I set up like a movie library in Plex have a video library in Windows Media Center and they're both pointing at the same folder? The answer to that is definitely yes. If you're talking recorded TV, probably not so much, because they both have their own, you know, sort of dedicated places where they put things. Now, you could, I guess, tell Plex to store all of its recorded TV stuff in a folder that's pointing at the Windows Media Center recorded TV folder, and that might work. Like, it'll definitely work for writing and reading its own files that Plex makes. I still haven't gone back to check to see if Plex still supports WTV files. It used to, but I've heard rumors that it doesn't anymore. So, but I think we're going to get into that in one of these next questions. His next question is, Can Plex serve up my Windows Media Center videos onto my Windows phone using the Plex app? Again, this depends on what you mean by Windows Media Center videos. If by that you mean recorded TV, maybe, but only if they're not protected. You know, if you're using a cable card tuner and your cable provider does copy protection on the videos, No, you're not going to be able to watch those on anything but your Windows Media Center devices.
Oh, yeah, because Play Ready is only on Media Center and the Plex doesn't have it yet, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And I doubt that it ever will. And then, so if you mean other types of videos, like from a library that Media Center is pointing at and Plex is pointing at, well, then Windows Media Center doesn't actually factor into that conversation there.
Mm-hmm.
Question four. Do they use the same video file types? I'm not exactly sure what you mean here. If you mean on the DVR side, nope. Windows Media Center records into a container called WTV. It makes a WTV file, and it doesn't do any transcoding or anything like that. It's storing the raw MPEG-2 video and whatever audio format your TV provider is using inside of that container. Plex is similar. It doesn't natively do any conversion of the broadcast signal that you're getting, but it does store it in a different container format. It uses .ts files, but I think both of those would actually work just fine inside of Media Center.
It uses TypeScript files?
Not TypeScript. It's not for programmers.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
TS, yeah. I believe, just stands for transport stream.
Okay, I'll read the next one. You want to read the next one? I'll read the next one.
Go for it.
Does Plex work as my whole house media center, as we Windows Media Center does, with extenders throughout the house? And I can answer this one.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, essentially it does, correct. So you think of it just like as an extender, but that's a client device. So I kind of think of it as a server-client relationship. And the nice thing with Plex is that those clients are a lot of different devices. So an Apple TV, an Android TV, all of your mobile devices, another Windows machine can be set up there. Xbox One, PlayStation 4, I would assume. I'm not positive. I know Xbox One has a Plex app as well. And that's how I look at it. And then the streaming television DVR, it also serves up, right? You're not doing live television with Plex, but it would serve up your DVR content. And what's nice there is it works in the house or outside the house too.
Yeah, exactly. So there are Plex client apps for pretty much every imaginable platform.
Think of it as like Netflix, right?
You mentioned. It's exactly like Netflix. Netflix is on everything, and Plex is on almost everything.
Yeah, and the Netflix server is in the Netflix headquarters all around the world, right? But your Plex server is in your house.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool. The next one.
But it's still easy to use remotely.
Oh, yeah, super easy. It's pretty much, you're going to love it. Just install it, you're going to love it. does Plex, this one I don't know, does Plex serve up video in HD? And I'm pretty sure that yes, it does, and it'll transcode based on the device and you have different settings. The one that I don't know is what is the quality of video audio? Now, I'm assuming, Josh, that if I give it what are people using as containers nowadays? MKV still, is that a thing?
Let's say MKV is still probably the most popular.
Yeah, and I'm assuming the TV, it'll just serve back your raw TS stream. So if it has 5.1, it'll do it. If you're using MKVs, Plex does transcode on the fly. So it would transcode your audio and you probably have different settings, but I'm pretty sure it supports all the different Dolby stuff, I would assume, right?
So it doesn't support absolutely everything, I don't think. But the answer to this question really comes down to what does your client need? Because what you do is from your client app, whether that's your Windows phone, your Windows tablet device, whatever it is, you can say, give me everything as it's natively stored, or send this to me at a lower quality that's going to stream better over my network connection.
Yeah, so if you're streaming to like an Android device or an iOS device or Windows Phone device, you're not going to need 5.1 audio. Like, you just don't need it, you know? Right. You're not going to need 1080p video. Like, you don't need 1080p. Like, even though your screens are 1080p, your video is so shrunk down that you can get away with lower res than that too. So you would just, it would, you know, based on your setting. And the reason you want to do that is if you're away from your house too, is you want to adjust. You maybe want to lower stream if you're over, you know, cellular than you're on Wi-Fi. And if you're so far away, right, you want to stream that data.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it really just comes down to your client app in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you have little like Apple TVs or Android TVs all over, those are going to pull in the HD content and stream at full, probably 5.1 across the wire, just whatever it is.
Right. Question seven, can Plex be integrated into Windows Media Center, or would there not be a reason to do this? There's not going to be like a native thing. Like if you install Plex, it's not just going to suddenly show up inside of Media Center. There are, of course, third-party ways to put other buttons on the strips inside of Windows Media Center that mm-hmm. you could then configure to launch the Plex Home Theater app. But that would all be custom work that you'd have to do. But it wouldn't be that difficult. Is there a reason to do this? Maybe not. The one reason that I can think of to do this, well, there's really two. So the first one is maybe your household is just really used to using Plex, and now they're at the Windows Media Center and they want to watch a movie and they want to use Plex, so they want to switch to Plex. But the other reason is Plex supports way more file types and codecs than Windows Media Center does natively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that would be the big reason to do that.
Yeah. And I like the last question here would be, what is the reliability of Plex more or less work than Windows Media Center? And to me, I'll answer or give my use case here is, I just don't think about reliability. I think about support from the company. To me, Plex has been around for a long time. So to me, it's been super reliable. Whenever I've run it, especially on the different server devices, I mean, that's going to be up to your machine, right? So if you run on your own machine, or if you run on like an NVIDIA Shield TV, but to me, it's about like the support, right? You're paying to be like a member. It's a company that's going to be updating the product, going to be adding more stuff to it, you know, going to be handling all the devices. So to me, that's like what I think about, like in general, that you have, to me, I always had to like jump through hoops to get Windows Media Center to play my content correctly, but Plex just always did. That was kind of right. My, I say always, it's like, you know, not always, it's like 99%, but I never really had problems. Yeah. That's my interpretation of it. Maybe you interpret it a little bit different, Josh.
So this is a little bit harder for me to answer. Like I have 10 years of experience of running Windows Media Center, and I've had tons of issues in those 10 years. Does that mean that it's overall an unreliable product? No, if it wasn't reliable, I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't have been using it and forcing my family to use it for the last 10 years.
Yeah, Media Center basically just works once it's configured.
It does mostly just work, but it has its quirks. You know, there are times when Media Center fails. And I kind of chalk this up to there's a whole lot more going on with Windows Media Center than there is with Plex. At its core, Plex is, it's just a video player with a nice library over it. Windows Media Center is doing a lot more when it comes to, and this is less true now with Plex, but when it comes to recording TV and managing tuners and all of this craziness, mm-hmm. Plex didn't have to deal with any of that before. We'll see if that becomes a reliability issue with Plex going forward. But so far, I've had no issues with Plex. It's been very, very reliable for me.
Yeah, I think time will tell on the DVR experience. It's going to take some time for them to get it right, and that's why it's in beta, right? So that's why I think right now it's probably not worth it, in my personal opinion, probably not worth it to be like, hey, I'm going to go all in on Plex DVR and switch from Media Center that's been working for 10 years. But, you know, when you think about, hey, maybe it would be good to, you know, put a little client, you know, just, hey, listen, all of our TV is here and then all of our videos in Plex, you know, and then eventually you transition over so you get the family used to the Plex user interface. And we do that a lot. I mean, we use Android TV for everything. So scratch that. But for a while, I was jumping back between the Xbox and Media Center and Android TV. And I said, nope, Android TV 100% of the way. And we could not be more happier. So,
And what you started to describe is what we're doing. So we've got Windows Media Center still.
Yep.
But that's almost exclusively for TV. We're not really using it for anything but TV.
Yeah.
And then that's fed into an Xbox One, which we then use the Xbox One for Amazon and for Netflix and for YouTube and for our Plex client, which is running on, you know, the other machines that I was talking about earlier. So, I think it's a great way of doing it all. So that pretty much covers Kevin's questions. They were fantastic questions. Hopefully that cleared it up everything for Kevin and for anybody else who had similar questions about Plex. Again, if you'd like to shoot us an email for a future episode, you can do that at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So let's get on to the news this week.
I'm ready.
James, today, Microsoft hosted their big Windows 10 fall event thing. It had some similar generic sounding title. It doesn't matter. But it was today. Well, I guess, you know, first off, before we get into all of the actual things that they announced and showed off today, what were your impressions of the show? Did you get to see it?
Yeah, so I actually got to see. So I was doing a keynote this morning, so I got to see about the first hour and a half when they announced the studio at the end. And I was super excited. I have watched many Apple events. I will watch it. I think it's tomorrow, the next day, the new Apple event. I'm very excited about it. I just got done watching the Nintendo Switch reveal, which was super cool. And this event, how it was sold to me, sometimes these events are so generic that you have no idea what they're going to announce. And going into it, I was like, hey, new Surface Book, like that's going to happen, right? Like that's what I want. That's all I was expecting. I was like, new Surface Book, maybe, I don't know, that's it. That's all I wanted. So my going into it, that's all I thought that Microsoft was going to talk about at this event, because the branding around it was so, you know, not descriptive of what it was going to be.
Right.
I guess I didn't realize going in that it was actually going to be a, hey, here's what's coming up next for Windows 10. So I didn't know about that they were going to talk all about the Windows 10 event. So I think that they at least broke it down into good segments. But like, hey, we're going to talk about Windows 10, and then we're going to talk about some new hardware. And they talked about Windows 10 for like an hour.
Right.
So that was like almost all I got to see, and then everything else I was like, eh, you know, whatever. I was just kind of like, eh, it is what it is. But my impressions overall, like, were it was long. Like, it was my overall show impressions, it was long, too long.
Agreed. It was 2 hours long, and it definitely did not need to be that long.
No, it's not a developer keynote, 2 hours, that's too long too. And the thing was, I think that it just felt long. That was my thing, is that it was Apple events, they'll go for like 2 hours. And the last one, when they announced like the new iPhones and stuff, like some of the parts felt long, but overall you're like, oh, now an hour and 45 minutes is gone. I didn't really realize it. For this event, I was like, all of these segments are long and the entire thing is long. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, let me just tell me, just let me buy it. Like, just let me give you my money. which is why I kind of actually like the Nintendo Switch reveal last week, because they're like, here's a 3-minute video, you're gonna like want it, and then bye, we'll tell you next year. So I was like,
right.
So that was my impressions. I enjoyed the presenters. We had a lot of product managers and program managers, a mix of that. I think their presenter selection was great. It's very diverse, very open. What I really liked was the first 20 minutes I really liked, because the first 20 minutes of the event was all about accessibility. And I love the story that we have here at Microsoft. It's actually a big push internally, because that helps externally too, in the accessibilities. They told so many amazing stories. Like, these stories almost make me cry, because it's so inspiring in a way. Like, these are challenges that I don't have to live through. Like, I can see, I can hear, I have, you know, all my senses and things like that. And some of these stories about the little girl that had cancer, and she was using her Xbox to connect with like friends, and get through like the surgeries, and are like amazing. Like, I love the stories, and what technology is doing. So to me, it was kind of like, hey, like, our technology is empowering and making the world, a better place. Whereas we would say our mission is to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. Which is a great mission statement. It essentially, you can interpret it how any way you want. It's very broad. But I really like that. I thought the presenters did good. My favorite part is that they let Panos, right, talk for like, yeah, an hour. And I was like, oh my God, stop. Stop talking. So that was kind of my impressions. I really liked the opening. I liked the presenters. A lot of them I zoned out on we'll get through the different sections that I'm super excited about. But that's kind of my overall impressions of it. I didn't like, what did you think of the venue?
The only thing that stuck out to me about the venue was that the seats that everybody got to sit in looked really comfortable.
Yeah, the seats were like huge, but it looked like a super tiny room.
Yep. Yeah, it did.
In New York.
I pretty much completely agree with you on all of that stuff. Like, it was way too long. The mix up of presenters was really cool. Like, you know, for a tech thing, we're used to seeing a whole bunch of dudes on stage. Mm-hmm. And it started with one, you know, it started with Terry Myerson. It ended with Satya Nadella. Those are to be expected. But almost, it might have been every other presenter was a woman. And so that was, yeah, that was nice to see. Terry didn't totally suck. Like, he's normally completely awful. He wasn't completely awful this time, so he cleared that very low bar, so that was good.
It was weird that he opened. It was weird that he opened. I don't know why, but to me it was a little bit strange, but that was it, you know.
And then, you know, I wasn't there, so I had to rely on the live stream, and and Microsoft has had issues with live streams in the past. I didn't have any issues. I didn't hear about other people having issues with the stream either, so that was nice.
Yeah, that was using I think Azure live streaming, because you could tell that it's the Azure media streaming service because it has the little like circular loading, you know, with the little blue like rainbowy things.
Yep.
That's how you know it's different. They used to be like the Silverlight streaming stuff. I'm pretty sure. I don't quote me because I don't work on the teams, nor do I actually know, but I'm pretty sure because it's very similar. And that's the Azure streaming stuff. So yeah, the live stream was very good. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So, now let's talk about some of their announcements. Like, we're going to touch on everything that they talked about at not everything, but most of the things that they talked about at a super high level, except for the things that really, really matter to our core audience. So we'll just quickly hit on some of the high level points. So once they actually got into topics, you know, they started, like you said, by talking about what's coming next in Windows 10, and they started by giving us the name of it. You know, we just got in August the Windows 10 anniversary update. Mm-hmm. Well, this next one is going to be called the Windows 10 Creators Update.
Terrible name.
It's not a great name.
All of them. Anniversary update. Terrible name.
Yeah, yeah. They're all kind of bad.
Wish I had a theme.
I don't know.
I don't know.
The themes that Apple uses get annoying and old and, you know, whatever. People always mess them up anyway. I don't really care about the name.
It's going to update automatically for free, so it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a key thing to point out. This will come early next year. That's all they're saying is early 2017, and it's free. If you've got Windows 10, you'll get this update for free. So in terms of features, what they spent the first probably half hour focusing on is 3D. Like, everything is all about 3D. They've made a new version of Microsoft Paint called Paint 3D. And it's really cool. Like, it is really, really, if you want to make something 3D and you have no idea how to do it, you're going to be able to do it in Paint 3D.
Yeah, but I wish Paint was just really better. Where's my next version of Paint?
I thought they were working on another version of Paint. Like, I thought that was already out.
The one that's installed by default? Is there one in the UWP store? I don't open that store.
I thought there was a new UWP Paint version.
Oh, but man.
Maybe that's this. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I use Paint all the time, but I would wish that Paint was like at least as good as GIMP, and GIMP is terrible. So, I miss Sketch. Like, I use Sketch on the Mac and I use a PC all the time just to do simple edits, you know. When you talk about 3D, right? Did they open up with HoloLens and the 3D stuff? No, they opened up with this thing. So it was bringing a 3D for all the things, for everyone. 3D for everyone, right? I think is what the theme was. And, you know, they had a really good story behind it. Like, hey, we want to bring, you know, this stuff everywhere. And, you know, there's already some HoloLens stuff with Skype and stuff like that. And they're like, you know, we have this, you know, 3D Paint thing, and let me show you it for 25 minutes. And you're like, oh my goodness, like, cool, 3D Paint. And that was my problem, is like, it's a 2-minute demo that lasted 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So they've got cool online community around user created 3D models and all this stuff. And they showed scanning a 3D, like a real life 3D object using your phone and importing it into Paint 3D. It looks kind of like magic, frankly. But and if it is as easy and powerful to use as they made us think that it is, then I think it could be a really big deal.
Yeah, I mean, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that they made a good analogy that, you know, we're so used to working in 2D all day, but the next generation is really this 3D, you know, whether it's gaming, whether HoloLens and, you know, Oculus and things like that. What they did is it's not just Paint 3D. So there's integrations into Office. There's camera mobile applications. They showed Windows Phone, but I'm pretty sure that it'll come to iOS and Android. They hinted at it, which would be cool. So you can take a photo of some stuff and it's 3D and it's in your app. And that's really powerful when I think if you're in, even in the enterprise or business, you're like, hey, I need this 3D rendering of something. If I can just go around and take some photos and you don't need like a crazy camera or something like that, that's super powerful. Right. And that was cool. The user generated stuff, I will say the only part that was really cool about that is that it seems like they made an internal tool of some sort that would be shared across the Paint 3D, across Office, across PowerPoint, all these different applications. So hopefully that's an API that developers can use that they can pull in 3D models, which would be cool. But a lot of these user-generated 3D models are coming from Minecraft, which is pretty cool because Minecraft has tons of content and a huge community already. So it seems like they want to mesh these worlds together, which is kind of cool.
Yep, and makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to skip a huge portion of the stuff and go to the end of the show where they talked about hardware, which is what you were expecting, a bunch of hardware. I wasn't. So
yep.
I expected nothing on the Surface Book side and kind of expected the big thing. But first, let's talk about what they did announce for the Surface Book. And that is they're giving it a spec bump. But if I heard them correctly, they're only bumping the highest end version of the Surface Book.
That's the one you want.
Sure, it is if you've got $2,000.
Do it. To me, it's like if I'm going to buy a laptop, I buy the most powerful one. I'm a developer, so it kind of makes a lot of sense. But I go all out because I'm either using it for, that's the thing is like, to me, a MacBook and a Surface Book is a high end piece of device. So I just want like the best one possible. Maybe not the full largest SSD that adds tons of money, but like I want all the RAM. I want the highest specs. I want the best processor. So I want it to last. If I'm buying a $300-$500 laptop, it doesn't really matter too much, right? But I think that most people, when I talk to them, they have the highest end Surface Book.
Okay.
That's what I find. Yeah.
So what they did is they somehow upped the graphical power. They didn't really say how, I would assume.
Two times.
There's a new graphics chip in there.
Yeah, probably.
Twice the graphical power. They're throwing around these teraflop numbers like crazy.
Gotta have 1.9
teraflops. No one knows what that means, but it's 1.9 teraflops.
It's a lot of flops of Tera.
They also did something like revolutionary that no company has ever thought to do before.
What's that?
Increased battery life.
Oh my goodness.
Did you hear how they did this? It'll blow your mind, James.
Hit me.
They added more batteries to it.
What? That is revolutionary. That is revolutionary. I don't
know why no one else does this. You know, instead we just make thinner phones with shorter battery life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how about you just add more batteries to the thing? So
shove some more batteries in there.
Exactly. So yeah. 30% longer battery life, which is kind of nuts. They say 16 hours of battery life.
That's good.
That's crazy for a laptop that powerful. And it'll be $2,400 and available in November.
I like that. I'm stuck with the current Surface Book. That's what I currently have. It's a great device. It is for a super high-end machine. It does have some weird bugs from time to time, I will say. My hope, Josh, going into this is I'm like, they're gonna make just a laptop. They're not gonna make another Surface Book. I wanted a Surface Pro laptop. That's what I want. And they didn't do it. It's the same exact, that's the thing is it, I mean, it's just like a MacBook Pro, right? It's the same design, essentially. There's like a few modifications, but it looks the same. It has a detachable thing. You can flip it over. Yeah, cool. So if you're buying a Surface Book, this is a Surface Book that you buy, you know?
Right. Exactly.
That's it. Nothing special. If you have the older Surface Book that was super high end, like me, it's going to be great. I don't need 2X graphical power. You know, does that mean I only have 0.95 teraflops? Because, I mean, that's not even one teraflop. And I don't, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to be telling people that.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. But yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful screen. It's all set up. I'm shocked that they didn't do multiple sizes. That was kind of my surprise by it.
So I think that we're going to see a real update to the Surface Book
next year, in the spring. Oh, in the spring.
Because they also didn't say anything at all about Surface Pro 4.
Killing it. Not
so, yeah.
You think
so?
That,
new stuff.
Yeah,
new stuff in the spring.
What's the life of the Surface Pro though? The Surface Pro, right? What's the Surface Pro 4 or whatever? That's what we're on right now. Surface Pro 5. It's coming out.
They're usually yearly, roughly.
Okay.
So it'll be more than a year at that point. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. So the big new thing and it is big.
It's huge.
Is the Surface Studio. It is the all-in-one Surface PC that we've been expecting due to the leaks. Mm-hmm. We didn't quite expect this, though, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Panos got up there, and he was like, this, just look at it. Look at it. I'm going to turn this right here, and I just want you to look at it. We're looking. It's a great-looking machine. Yeah, we looked at it for like an hour of this presentation. And so the Surface Studio is an all-in-one transforming device in a way. That's what I'm going to, it's a transforming device. And it's essentially a interesting take on an all-in-one, because if you think of the iMac, like the iMac is Apple's all-in-one and it has a base, but every single bit of it is in the actual display. Mm-hmm. And this is the iMac competitor, and Apple, we'll find out tomorrow. I think it's the events tomorrow or the next day. We'll find out what Apple's going to do with the Mac line, which I'm super interested in. I think it may just be about MacBooks. I think that they'll ignore it, but there's something that I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have my own podcast, Merge Conflict.fm. And you know, it's interesting is that for developers or people in the high end space, Apple has kind of ignored us. There's no big Mac Pro. There's not really been a new iMac that's come out. Like they've kind of gotten rid of the displays, things like that. And this is kind of, to me, Microsoft's response to say, listen, you know, you guys and gals want a super powerful, beautiful desktop all-in-one display. We know you want it because you bought a bunch of iMacs. And listen, ours is now better, more beautiful, more thinner. And it has this amazing, beautiful touchscreen. So all you designers that are buying all these Wacom attachments, which are super awesome devices, you don't have to. It's all here. It's got PixelSense display, 28 inches of PixelSense display, which is crazy.
Yeah, this thing, like, you're kind of joking that they're saying, you know, this is the beautiful, powerful PC that you want, but it is. It is absolutely gorgeous. And it is really, really stinking powerful. That 28-inch, ridiculously thin 3x2 display looks beautiful. It's got an i7. It's got up to 32 gigs of RAM. It's
I
got
want that.
2 terabytes of storage.
Into it.
It's got a GTX 980M graphics card in it. Ooh, like,
love it.
This thing is ridiculously powerful. It's got, you know, one of the cooler features, I think. And maybe not everybody will think this is cool, but if you like Cortana, it's got a microphone array built into the bezel that goes around the LCD so that you can use the Cortana voice features, whether you're sitting right at it or across the room. I think that's cool, as we hope to see Cortana grow up and expand more into a nice voice control platform.
Mm-hmm.
This thing looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
But again, it's only really, really cool if you've got the money to spend on it. It starts at $3,000. It tops out at $4,200. It's available in November, I believe. If you're an artist, this thing looks phenomenal. Like if your job is drawing with computers, buy this. Like it's amazing.
Yeah.
But if you're not an artist, then maybe this isn't the all-in-one for you.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's called the Studio, and they showed it because the thing here is that it can actually lay nearly flat, and you can, Panos, he like wrote on it. They did a lot of inking today, a lot of pen and inking, 3D paint, got to do a lot of inking, ink it all. I just hate buzzwords. He really did a great job of just saying, like, listen, if you're a designer, you're an artist, you're in the market for a high-end, beautiful machine, an all-in-one, and, you know, if you're a developer, this is a great machine. This is money machine right here. I would buy this. I want this. I want to put this in my house, and I want it. I would like that. Can I have it? Josh, can I have it? I want it.
You can have it.
For $3,000.
I like upgradable machines. This isn't upgradable.
It's not upgradable. We're in the world. Well, it does have that interesting little base. So there's like this base on the bottom. So all of the horsepowering is not really in the monitor because it's super crazy thin. It's like the thinnest monitor, ever made or something crazy. Some stat.
Right. 12 millimeter thin LCD. Ooh.
Beautiful. It's not upgradable, and it's just like an iMac. So if you're in the market for something like that, but on Windows on it, this is the machine for you. I would buy this. Yeah, yep, this is a great machine. It's awesome.
It's cool. All right. Yep. So that is all of the lesser important news to you guys. So let's get into the stuff that really, really matters. And we're going to start with some audio news. And that is that one of our biggest complaints with the Xbox One is finally going to be solved for all of you. Woo! And that is Bitstream audio and real Bitstream audio. I know what you're thinking. I've seen a Bitstream audio option in my Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah, doesn't that Bitstream?
Not really. It doesn't really mean what you think it means. That word that you keep saying. Yeah, it doesn't really do it on the Xbox One currently. We've talked about this some in the past. If you really want a clear definition on this, go back to the last episode where we had Rob H. on from AV Rant. He does an excellent job of explaining what this is and what the problems are with it currently on the Xbox One. Let's make this really simple, though. What it means is right now, if you have an Xbox One, whether it's a One or a One S, and you want Atmos or DTSX or any of those really cool advanced audio formats, you can't have it. It won't work with the Xbox One. It'll just send out 5.1 or 7.1 audio. You're not getting cool advanced audio right now. With this Bitstream audio pass-through that is coming through, you will. They've specifically said the words Atmos. In fact, the quote that was on Major Nelson's Twitter account and on the Xbox Wire news article said, Bitstream audio pass-through, including Dolby Atmos support, is coming soon to Xbox One with our Blu-ray player. So there's a few things to unpack there. The first is, it says, including Dolby Atmos. A lot of people heard Dolby Atmos and thought, well, what about DTSX?
Yeah, because you're like, Dolby Atmos, I don't even have a 18.1 Dolby Atmos setup in my house.
Or maybe you do, but maybe your content is using DTSX instead. Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. They're both going to work. That's what Bitstream means. What Bitstream means is it's going to take the audio from the source, probably a UHD Blu-ray disc or something like that, and it's going to just send it off to your AV receiver. It's not going to touch it. That's the important thing. It won't touch it. It just sends it through, lets your receiver do whatever it wants to do with it. That's how this stuff works.
Yeah.
So Dolby Atmos works. DTSX should work. All of those types of things should work, even though they weren't specifically said. They also say Xbox One. That's because it's not just the Xbox One S. Everyone assumed, well, not everybody, but most people assumed, oh, this is only coming to the Xbox One S. I don't want to buy a new box. It's okay. If you have the original Xbox One, it'll work there also.
Yeah, that just means it's a software thing. That's all.
Right.
Makes sense.
And then the last thing that they said that got people questioning it was they said, with our Blu-ray player. And people said, that's great, but what about Netflix? What about Amazon? What about games? And Mike Ibarra later tweeted, and he said, yes, Bitstreaming and Atmos will work on all Xbox One products, not just Xbox One S, for both video and games that support it. So it sounds like other apps other than just Blu-ray player can do this, but they'll probably need to be updated to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're streaming from Netflix, I mean, I don't even think we're in the day where it's not like Netflix is going to send you true 4K and true Dolby Atmos. Like, they don't want to put that through the pipe just yet. I mean, there is 4K streaming technically on Netflix, but I mean, is it really true? You know what I mean? Yeah. Compared to like a Blu-ray disc. When I put a Blu-ray disc in, I expect perfection. Like, this should be the best. I spent money on this. And, you know, I have an Axim, wireless surround sound system. And this is awesome for me because I actually went in, Josh. It was so funny. The first thing I did is on each of my devices, I said, what mode do I need to put my devices in? And there's a, on the Axim website, there's like, what audio settings should my connected devices have? And it always says, use Bitstream audio. So that's like what I set it to first. It's like, use Bitstream audio on your Blu-ray devices. So it'll get DTS:MA and Dolby True HD. And then I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then I read, for game consoles such as Xbox One or PS4, send it uncompressed PCM. And I was like, oh, I gotta send it this uncompressed. And then it has like audio. It has to do stuff, right? It has to process it essentially, I think. I don't quite understand how audio works, but all I remember is I used to have to do all the uncompressed PCM stuff back in the day. But I was like, man, I just want to like send it this Bitstream thing because this is what I've heard about for so long. So it's cool that we're actually going to get it and I can toggle that switch officially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is one big thing that we don't know for sure. This should solve it, but it wasn't specifically mentioned. And that was that currently, if you tell your Xbox One to just send it out, do the 5.1 or 7.1 PCM, if you have a 7.1 setup, it'll send 5.1 and it sends it to the wrong speakers in the back. I always get it mixed up. I don't have my own 7.1 setup to test this on, but I want to say that it sends the side channel data to the rears or the rears to the sides. I don't remember which one it is. They didn't specifically mention whether or not this will be fixed. I think by the fact that it's Bitstream, it will be fixed because they're not monkeying with the stream anymore.
Sounds good.
So that should fix it. What I don't know is how the heck does this actually work?
Magic.
Because the main theory has always been that this is so hard on the Xbox One because the Xbox does things other than just playback Blu-rays. Mm. There are other system sounds that are going on. And for the Xbox to be able to send those notification sounds and things like that to your receiver, it needs to decode the stream, input its own sound stuff into it, and then send it off to the receiver. So I don't know if they've just decided, if you're doing something that's doing bit streaming, we just won't play the extra sounds or what it is that they're doing there. So
they created bit stream merging.
And well, so, I wonder if it
put
is
the
something
bits
like
together,
that.
Right?
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I really don't know. I would love to hear a detailed explanation of how this is going to work, but I don't know if we're going to get that until it's actually available and someone analyzes what's going on and can tell us.
As long as it sounds better to me, that's all I care about. I'm not an audiophile, but I'm sure it'll sound better. This next one, are we done with this one? Are we done with the Bitstream? That's a lot of pass through audience. So the next one here, I'm sure you're super excited about. It's actually super cool. I didn't actually see it at the announcement, the Microsoft event today, because they didn't announce it. And this is that the Microsoft's Groove Music Maker, not to be confused with Groove Music, is coming out in the Windows 10 Creators Update. And think of it like a GarageBand competitor. So it's going to allow you to, modify music, sample tracks, do BPM, do a bunch of controllings, mic recording, things like that, and slap it all together. Can this be my ultimate Audacity replacement?
It could be.
That'd be great.
But we don't really know, because basically all we know about this thing is we saw some very short clips of it during a video, we just have like a couple of screenshots to go off of. It looks cool. It looks like a simplified digital audio workstation thing, like GarageBand, like you said. So in some ways more powerful than like an Audacity. But I don't know. We'll see. They didn't actually announce it. They didn't tell us anything at all about it. We just assume that it's a real thing and that it would come out at least with the Windows 10 Creators Update, if not beforehand.
Yeah, because it could just be a UWP app or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's got to be UWP, right?
Makes sense. Yeah, unless there's something specific inside of the Creators Update that is enabling some new APIs or something like that. It could be a UWP app. It could be a Centennial app. It could be something like that. People are like, what are Centennial apps? I don't know. You have to go Google it. But that's like taking a Win32 application and wrapping it in a UWP. But it looked like a UWP app, so I'd assume that's what it is.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to some gaming news. There were some gaming announcements.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. That was a third. This is a third of the entire thing was gaming.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So excited. So
this first announcement, not really a very surprising announcement.
Oh, it is. It's great. I mean, it's not, but how they announced it. Oh, it was so cheesy, but so well done. I'm so excited.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience what it is then?
So Microsoft bought a company called Beam. Not too long ago. That was in the news. You guys probably discussed it. Yep. And Beam is like a Twitch competitor. If you know what Twitch is, well, Twitch lets you stream your PC or games live and video clips, and you can be a personality. which is pretty cool. There's a huge community. Twitch is super huge, and Twitch is owned by Amazon. Now, what Microsoft did is they built Beam into the Windows Creator Update. Kind of think about how you already have like a Windows, like Xbox application. Like they built it in. You just say, hey, like I'm playing this game and start a Beam session, essentially. Enable a broadcast. Like anyone can broadcast. And what's really cool is they build it on top of the fact of how like Xbox Live works is you have your arenas and you know, you can do custom friend events and clubs and like you can invite just your friends to watch and you can have an interaction with them and it'll track all these stats and you can do like all this crazy stuff, right? So like all built into it essentially with the clubs. I think it was basically around the club concept of it. But you have like friends lists and people can join in, and it was really cool just how it seemed to work just really well. And that's what probably surprised me was when anything that we do here at Microsoft just happens to work really well. That surprised me, but it seems like it works on Xbox and it works on PC, correct? Am I wrong? Am I right? Am I wrong?
Well, the announcement here is basically that it doesn't work on Xbox at all yet.
Coming soon.
And it's not built into the Xbox app on Windows 10 yet, but it will be.
Yeah.
And I think they said they made it sound like this particular functionality is coming, that could come before the Creators Update launches. That's the impression that I got.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, I just think it's, I think to me, if it lowers the barrier of entry, I mean, you know, I think the most watched videos, the most streamed stuff nowadays is gaming. So I think this could be a big win. And when you look at like the NPD numbers and you look to see what, is it still NPD numbers? I don't even know. But whatever the numbers are, like you want Xbox One to launch and do even better. And this could be a big distinguishing factor for it when it comes to actually people that are streaming. So Xbox and PC gaming. So it could be a big like renaissance, if you will.
Yep. Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to check out Beam one of these days. I think we could actually use Beam for doing the show live. That could be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Their chat functionality seems a lot better than the stuff that we're using for the show.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people even use Twitch for. A lot of it's for gaming, but people go on and they'll have a cooking video or they'll have like live stream of, you know, knitting something. I don't know. They'll do whatever, right? Just whatever their followers are like. And then there's a built-in community that's following there and they get notifications. It's pretty nice.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. The next announcement, also not hugely surprising here, but we've talked recently about new functionality added to the Xbox lately called Arena. And Arena is it's basically tournaments on Xbox Live. But currently, tournaments are set up by Microsoft. So like there's a Killer Instinct tournament going on right now. Mm-hmm. But what they're allowing you to do eventually with this, the Creators Update, is you'll be able to make your own custom tournaments. So I'll be able to make my own Killer Instinct tournament or That's NHL cool. or whatever I want. Choose my game, choose who I'm going to invite, whether it's just some of my friends, maybe everybody in a club that I'm in, choose, you know, whether this is single elimination, double elimination, set up the start date and time, send out invitations. And then it, of course, does all of the stat tracking. So when James and I go head to head in Killer Instinct and he destroys me, we don't have to like write down on pen and paper, well, James won 2-0. So he moves on to play Richard. Like it just does all of that for you. That's and it's cool. all just going to be built right in. So that I think will be fun and will enable some fun scenarios for people. You know, like we've done Rocket League tournaments at work and stuff like that. And if this was all just built in, that would have made that a whole heck of a lot easier. And then let's move on. This is one of the bigger things that they discussed today. This wasn't exactly focused on like the Xbox side of this. It really kind of stemmed more out of the 3D conversation, but they did start to talk a little bit about the HoloLens and their holographic platform and how that's going to be changing in the Creators Update. And they introduced something that we've not seen from them before with a slightly different name, Windows Holographic VR. Microsoft is finally doing their own virtual reality thing built into Windows. And it uses some of the holographic technology that's in the HoloLens. And that's where this does start to get a little bit more difficult and tricky to talk about, because I think people already get kind of confused about what the heck is HoloLens and how exactly does this work? And is it is it VR? No, it's AR. Well, what's AR? So well,
it's mixed reality. It's a combination of virtual reality, augmented reality, and some other the real physical reality. I don't know, something like that. Like, right. It's all the realities in one. And that's what it kind of is, the description.
All the reality you can handle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess at a super high level, the HoloLens and AR, augmented reality, is a visor that you wear that you can still see through. You can see your surroundings. You can see your living room or wherever you are. Mm-hmm. And then in the visor screen, it projects other things on the screen so that you can see them like they're in your actual physical space. So yeah,
and it's completely wireless. So there's no cables, right. No anything. It's a full computer built in there.
Right. Whereas virtual reality, it's a headset, you put it on, you can't see anything else that's physically around you. It completely blocks your vision so that you can only see the screen inside of the headset.
Yep.
So what they're doing is they're basically taking VR headsets and then taking some of the holographic stuff that they're doing and applying it in there. So like one of the things that's really, really impressive about the holographic stuff built into the HoloLens is if you take an object, like in their demo, they did shopping with the HoloLens and this guy wanted to check out new bar stools for his house. So he clicked on a bar stool and he put it in his house, like in his house in front of him in real life. And it snaps to the floor because it knows where the floor is in your house. And it snaps it there so that it's positioned appropriately, realistically, so that you can see, is this bar stool going to fit well in my house and things like that. So they're bringing that sort of technology into their VR stuff so that you can snap things into place and they'll be where you expect them to be. They'll react to the environment the way that you would expect them to react to the environment.
Yeah, it's like a combination of Oculus Rift and HoloLens and HTC Vive, right? So you have the VR side of things, and then the HTC Vive, though, what it does, it maps your room. So it knows your physical space when you walk around, but it doesn't map to say, oh, this is the wall, right? It's not a real representation of a wall, but it's kind of like a blend of. People have called me out 1,000 times on this because I was like a VR and AR hater for a while, but there's like this weird combination of it. But like essentially in the virtual reality maps to your environment. So the floor, when you set a ball on the ground, like it's on the floor, but you're not seeing your floor. You're seeing a virtual floor, but it is the floor. So, you know, if you move your hands up and down, when you hit the floor of the room, it's also the bottom of the floor in the game, for instance. Exactly. But that thing is tethered to a physical machine. And I'm assuming these are tethered to a physical machine. I don't know. I don't even care about this thing, but, I go in and out of phases of loving and hating VR. Cause I think here, like all of the 3D stuff, like I totally got like super consumer friendly. Like you got some new hardware, got these new Xbox features, like Beam, like people get it. And then like you're saying, right? You're like, VR is already confusing. We have, you know, I did a whole episode on Merge Conflict about this, but it's like you have phones that you can slap into this thing, and then there's controllers for this other thing, and then there's the HoloLens thing, and then there's the Oculus, but then the Oculus is going to get little controllers, then the Vive already has control, and then there's a PlayStation VR. Like, how many freaking visors? Is it like smartwatches where like everyone and their uncle and their grandmother want to make a VR device? Like, everyone wanted to make smartwatches 2 years ago, and now we all have smartwatches and no one wants any more smartwatches. So I don't know. Like, it's confusing to me. And like, we have all these, you know, Dell, Lenovo, Acer, HP, like, oh my goodness, like you're going to have like all of these different companies building and like the choices. Like, I'm going to walk into Best Buy and I'm like, oh, what kind of VR do I want today? Like, just I'm imagining my mom walking into Best Buy and they're like, turn on this, you know, you turn, put this on. Like, I don't even know what's going on. My mom's bright, but I mean, it's confusing. It's super confusing. I mean, And you're calling it holographic VR, which is like a super like good name in relations to saying like, this is what that says is this is not HoloLens. That's what this says. This is saying that it's VR, but it's better than VR. That's what it's saying. But it's not it's not mixed reality, but it's somewhere in between.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So the other thing to hit on, well, there's really two more things to hit on here. So you mentioned that a bunch of partners are making headsets to go along with this. And here's the thing. Anybody who's familiar with VR in its current state, on the PC, you've got Oculus Rift. It's $600, requires a $1,500 PC to use. Mm-hmm. You've got HTC Vive, still needs a $1,500 PC to use it. And it's $800 for the headset
and all
the
awesome
gear that maps your room. It's awesome, but it's really expensive.
Yeah.
Microsoft said today that headsets that'll support this stuff will start at $300.
Too expensive.
Which is like roughly the price of the PlayStation VR.
Here's what's crazy about this. I was just listening to the CAGcast from Cheap Ass Gamer. I've been a long CAGger for a long time. And they had a really good point when it comes to this, is that this thing's $300. It's the same price as an Xbox One. That is, like, people will get mad that an Xbox One costs $300 or $400, but like this VR headset is $300 or $500 or $600. Like, that is mind-boggling. Like, the PlayStation VR comes out, and like, you could buy every game console out there for the like the, you know, the price of it, which is bananas to me. I don't know. I just don't. Even at $300, it's still not, it's not an instant purchase. Like, Google came out with their Dream VR headset and I was like, $80? Yeah, whatever, I'm in. Like, I'll use it twice and it looks nice. $80, that's that sub 100 number. Like, if Microsoft took this on Shark Tank and they're like, hey, you know, here it is, $300, you know, they'd be like, eh, Lori might be, this is a great QVC product. But big Shark Tank fan. But you know, that's the thing is, like, I think it gets a lot closer to consumer. But I'm still not sold on this. That it's like, oh, cool, $300. Like, I would just buy an Xbox. I don't know, does it plug into Xbox? Like, I don't know. It seems I'm confused now. Now I'm just confused, and I don't know what I don't know what I want to like anymore. There's too many VRs and ARs and mixed realities, and I'm sure people will be all upset about this in the chat, but I don't know. I'm a little bit, confused. I think I'm confused. James is confused.
So you asked the question that leads me into the last thing that I wanted to talk about with the VR stuff here is they didn't specifically mention whether or not this will work with the Xbox, but I think it will. And there's a few reasons for that. The first is the Xbox kind of needs VR. If they're gonna, like, unless they're gonna say, well, PlayStation is VR, we think it's going to do terrible and no one's actually going to want it, then maybe they don't do this. But I think they are going to want to do VR. VR is the big trend in gaming right now. It's going to continue to be a thing for a while.
They have to do it just because they can't be the you know, they can't let Sony do it, and they can't do it. Just like Sony, like when the Kinect came out, they're like, we got a camera too, you know?
Right.
Like, hey, we got a camera. Hey, we got little hand things, and that works so well. So I think that was it. Like, they have to do it because everyone else is doing it. And that, as a consumer, if you go and you're like, hey, I can buy an Xbox One S, or I can buy a PlayStation 4 Pro, and maybe I'm not even into AR VR right now, but you're sitting there and you're like, the games are pretty similar. Like, Uncharted's cool, but like Halo's pretty cool and Gears of War's cool. So you're like, going back and forth on the games, like, yeah, it could go either way on this, right? And then you're like, well, PlayStation has all this VR stuff. Maybe I'll want to do it. But Xbox doesn't. And I think that's probably why this is so important, you know,
well,
to your statement.
I think that's part of it. So I think they want to do it for all of those reasons that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll be able to do it because the Xbox is running Windows 10.
It's true.
So all of the stuff that they're doing here for Windows on your PC, it's all going to be on your Xbox too.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
good point.
Like, I don't know if it's going to work on the Xbox One or the Xbox One S that you have right now, but next year, Scorpio is coming.
Yeah.
And Scorpio is definitely going to be able to handle this.
Yeah, and they said Scorpio is built for VR, right? That's what they said.
Yeah, so I think we will see this happening. And if they've got headsets starting at $300, which is what the PlayStation VR cost, then they're price competitive at least.
Yeah, well, I think the PlayStation VR is even more expensive than 300. I think it's like 500.
I thought that, oh, maybe it's 400, but then for all of the extra stuff like the Move controllers and stuff, it's 500. I don't know because I don't have a PlayStation
bundle. Yeah, I think you need the little, I think it's like, yeah, $400 to $500 is what you need. But yeah, I mean, I think it's important that they'll do it. What's interesting is I think that all of these little holograms, I think they're all tethered. They're all tethered, correct?
Correct. Yep. They're all tethered. Except for HoloLens.
Yeah, HoloLens, limitless possibilities.
Right. So, and then the other thing there is if you buy a VR headset for your Windows PC, there's a good chance that VR headset is also going to work on your Xbox. Like, that's if this wasn't nice. Super clear, like, you could buy one headset that's going to work on your game console and your PC.
That's nice.
Which Sony isn't doing right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. Good point. Josh Pollard, so you did your homework on this puppy. I like it. Yeah.
All right. So two more quick Xbox things to hit on before we get out of here. First one, we haven't mentioned this at all over the last couple of months, but for the last 3 months, the Xbox One has been topping the console sales charts. These are by NPD. You mentioned the NPD charts earlier. July, August, and September, Xbox One beating out the PlayStation 4 finally and consistently. We've seen the Xbox One win one or two other months prior, but never consistently. So now it's 3 months in a row. July, I can't really explain. I mean, there was E3, but E3 was impressive for Sony too. August, makes total sense. August is when the Xbox One S launched. So lots of people are buying Xbox One S's.
And tons of great bundles. Like, I don't know if you watch Slick Deals at all, but I mean, you could buy an Xbox, not an S, but you could buy an Xbox One for like $250 with like 1,000 games, like, and like extra controllers, like just get these off the shelves. And like, I think they move some serious inventory. I mean, I think it's going to be a huge Black Friday. I think like Xbox is going to, you're going to see so many game deals. Like, Microsoft is going to move product. Cause to be honest, you know, I was recently just looking at the total, like, you know, sold charts. I mean, it's interesting. Like, according to Wikipedia, at least the last thing that's on there was that, you know, the Wii U worldwide had still sold more than the Xbox One, which is hard to say because the Xbox One only really sells in the US mostly, in some of Europe, where it doesn't sell in Japan at all, you know? I mean, I was just in Taipei and it was only PlayStation 4 there, right? So,
right.
I mean, granted, the Wii U's been out a year longer and, you know, it's a system on the way out anyways with the Switch, but like the PlayStation 4 is doing really well. I didn't even realize it in my mind. I was like, whoa, it's actually doing really well globally. I mean, in the US, it could be a little bit more competing, but I think it's going to be an amazing year for the Xbox One. I don't really think that the PlayStation 4 Slim is going to push things too ahead. I think it's a little confusing there. I think PlayStation VR is not going to push new sales. That's just going to be increased sales, like, of PlayStation merchandise, right? I don't think anyone, maybe some holidays, but that's an expense of, like, I'm going to go buy a PlayStation 4 Pro with PlayStation VR and a bunch of games. Like, you just bought the best gaming machine in the entire world, right? Like, you could go buy an awesome gaming rig for like $2,000. But that would be a huge Christmas present. I think people are going to go in this fall. They're going to be looking for bundles, like the Xbox One S, the Xbox One, like, are going to have crazy bundles because, you know, there's still stock of Xbox Ones out there. And I think that it's going to crush it in general. That's me.
Yep. I agree. I hope that's what we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Last quick story. It's almost November. So that means new games with gold
new
on
games.
The Xbox One. You're going to get Super Dungeon Brothers all month long. And Murdered Soul Suspect from November 16th to December 15th. On the 360, you get Secret of Monkey Island for the first half of November.
Get that.
And yeah, definitely. And Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon second half of November.
Nice.
Yeah. And again, I'll keep reminding you guys, all of these 360 games that are games with gold, they're backwards compatible. They will play on your Xbox One. The other cool thing I want to mention here, Super Dungeon Brothers. This is a brand new game. It is launching for free
on the
Xbox One. That's very cool.
It's always, they got a good deal out of that.
Free games are great, but free games that are brand new, even better.
Yeah, so that's super cool. I like that. Yeah. Nice.
All right. So it's the end of the show. We always talk about what we're watching, what we're playing. For me, I have been watching a little bit of TV, been trying to get caught up on Homeland. I'm nearing the end of season 3, I think it is. I think I've only got a couple episodes left in that. That's continuing to be awesome. Jen and I have also been trying to sit down and finish season 1 of Quantico, now that they're like 5 episodes into season 2. Still really enjoying that show. On the gaming side, still playing lots of NHL, some Forza Horizon 3, and still trying to get through all of the different levels of Overcooked with my coworkers at work on our lunch break.
The game's so fun. That game's so fun.
It is so fun.
Yeah. It's a yelling match. That's what it is.
Oh my gosh.
Heather and I, we couldn't do it. We couldn't do it because we were just, we couldn't do it. It was creating havoc in the household. Yeah. It was good.
So what about you, James? What are you watching and playing?
Yeah, on the personal James front, I watched Making a Murderer on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Everyone should go watch that. And I just like binge watched it, and like I was like, this is so good. It really shows you how terrible some things are. On the family side of things, I've also been personally watching Last Man on Earth. That started up again, super excited. Heather and I have our family night. We watch The Good Place, which is a new show, which is relatively...
How is that?
It's okay. Like, it's not bad.
I love Kristen Bell.
Yeah, she's good. She's Kristen Bell.
All right, that's all I really need to hear.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. And it's got some good Kristen Bell humor in it. I like it. The characters are all pretty good. I just don't know how many seasons I see. Like, once you start watching it, you're like, oh, I could see this ending after a season. Not because it's bad, just because you're like, I don't even know where they're going to take this. So we're about 4-5 episodes. We're caught up. And it's good. It seems to get better. And halfway through the season, you're like, I think the season's over. And then you're like, oh, okay, cool. They actually found some more ideas that they can do in this world. But it's good. I liked it. We're watching Project Runway. The new season started up. Super good. Love it. A big, big Project Runway fan here. And then, of course, I have not started watching just yet, but The Walking Dead started up, and I have it. I already bought the season on Google Play, so I can get that. We've been watching Atlanta, which is super good.
What's Atlanta?
Oh, Atlanta is what's his name? Who's going to be the new Lando? I'm going to open up my Google Play Music.
Oh, yep. His name is right on the tip of my tongue. Well, he's the son of somebody.
But my library, because
Glover.
Yeah, Glover.
Danny Glover. Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Correct. Donald Glover.
Thank you, Soul Sweet in the chat.
Yes, yes. Donald Glover, or Childish Gambino by his rap name. Yes, Glover. So essentially, Atlanta. I think it's a lot written by Donald Glover, and he's super talented, amazing, like from Community and a bunch of other things, right? And produced too. So it's on FX. So if you have the FX stuff, but I just bought the season on Google Play stuff. Just because it's not on Hulu. And essentially he is kind of down and out. I mean, it's all based in Atlanta, and it's based on, I think his cousin or something like that has kind of come out with like a hip hop song that was like super popular, and he wants to be his manager. But it's kind of life in Atlanta, following him. And people describe Atlanta as a comedy. Like if you go Google Atlanta, it's like best new comedy and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's not a comedy at all. It is like, it's like maybe a super dark comedy, but it is definitely like a drama, like real life, like some stuff happens. I don't know. Do we have to edit out? Edit that out. Some stuff happens in there and you're like, oh, this is not a comedy, but super good. I think I really like it. Just because, I kind of like that style of film, but all the actors are really good. And it kind of, like I said, is all set into, Atlanta. And I think based on some of these performances and stuff, he's getting a lot of new parts, right? It's like Lando and stuff. So I'm super excited. Ooh, I'm so excited for the new Star Wars. Then what I've been playing is, so that's the TV side of things. We also went to go see, A Girl on a Train, the movie.
Never heard of it.
Oh my goodness. It's an amazing book. I don't read, but Heather said it was really good. It's a super good movie. I highly recommend it. If you liked Gone Girl, you'll love this movie. It's very similar in ways and not ways, but these are Gone Girl and a Girl on the Train, the girl that something by the train, Girl on the Train,
Lost Girl on the Train.
Yeah. Whatever.
Gone Girl on the Train.
Yeah. On the Train. It's super good. Very good movie. I recommend it. Good. Not family flick, but if you want to go on a little date night or whatever, it's pretty great. I'm excited for that. And then on the game side of things, I'm playing Doom still, trying to finish that off. And then on the Xbox One, and then I've just been carrying around my Nintendo 3DS. They came out with a bunch of new Street Pass games that are super fun. So I've just been playing that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for the show. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. And James, we'll get to all of your contact stuff after this, but so don't worry, I'm not forgetting you here. I'm just at Josh Pollard. Richard, the normal other half of the show, is at Richard Gunther, and then the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. We're on Google Plus, if anybody is still out there. We've got an email address. It's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got another podcast for you to listen to. It's called Home On. It's Richard's other show. It's about home automation and control. I love it. It's my favorite show to listen to. Sorry, James. Yours is second, I guess. And then
different audience.
If you like any of our shows, if you like any of our shows, you should obviously definitely be subscribing to them so you don't miss any of them. But then if you really like us, you can help us out by going over to iTunes and leave us a rating or a review. It helps us out a ton, and we really, really appreciate it. And you know, if you're just looking for other places to find us, we're not just on iTunes. We're on Pocket Cast and Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio and Google Play and, you know, pretty much everywhere that you can find podcasts. And then if you want to communicate with us in real time, like help us figuring out actors' names and things like that, you can do that by showing up on Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern is generally when we record the show. We stream it live, and we've got a chat room so that you can be a part of the show as we're recording it every week. It's not always Tuesdays. It's not always 8:30 p.m. So follow us on Twitter, because we tweet about when the show will be starting. So that is your best way to find out when we'll be live, and then come and join us. It's a ton of fun. James, thank you so much for being around tonight and
for
helping and filling in with all of your great wisdom and witty humor to go along with all of this.
I try.
If people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
You know, it's funny. I actually had lunch with Richard the other day. Did he tell you that?
He did. He sent me a picture. I was very jealous.
Yeah, we had sushi. Japanese. It was very good. In Seattle, he was in and for the home something, you know, show something. I don't know.
smart kitchen show.
Smart kitchen. Did you get your Loki? I got my Loki.
I ordered my Loki. Yeah.
Kickstarted the Loki. It wasn't really a Kickstarter. More of a hey, we're gonna make these. Do you want one?
right.
We're either gonna make them or not make them. Would you like one? So that's exciting. The mobile apps are out, but with Xamarin, no big deal. You can find me super easy, literally just like Josh and Richard. It is just my name, at James Montemagno. That is the easiest place to follow and stalk me. And if you're in Seattle, you could probably stalk me and tweet at me and see if I'll go get coffee with you. And then also have my own podcast. I mentioned it. I dropped the name earlier, but it's on development, and we talk tech too. So the last week's episode was on the Nintendo Switch, but also its impact on mobile gaming and where to get started as a mobile developer building games, and how can it impact TV, such as Android TV and Apple TV. And that conflict, Merge Conflict, is weekly every Monday at mergeconflict.fm as well.
Very
so that's
cool.
It. That's
Love
really
that
funny.
Too.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, well, that is going to do it for episode 386. I'm Josh Pollard. This week, I was joined by James Montemagno, and next week, I'll be back with my regular co-host, Richard Gunther, and that'll be episode 387. But until then, adios.
Peace.